Yeah, exactly. The concept is Frotis, which translates roughly to the rub. And to get there, the source takes us on this huge detour, really, through fundamental physics, how we perceive things.
Right, before we even get near an instrument.
Precisely. So our mission in this deep dive, it's pretty ambitious, actually. We need to try and connect these seemingly pretty radical claims.
Like all matter being a type of plasma.
That's one. And that resonance is like the most fundamental stuff in existence. We need to link that directly to how you, listening, might classify, play, and really hear sound.
And it's all framed through the internal ear.
The internal ear is the ultimate observer. Yeah, that's the framework.
So the big question isn't just about technique, it sounds like. It's about what's happening inside.
That's the heart of it. What happens when you really maximize that physical tactile connection with an instrument? And maybe more importantly, why is the sound we don't hear externally potentially?
Wow.
Oh, way more important for that inner feeling of the music.
Okay. So where do we start? Back at the beginning. Matter itself.
Let's dive right in there. Because this is where it gets really interesting and kind of foundational for everything else. The source just takes it. All states of matter. They're types of plasma.
Okay.
And all matter is constantly changing, transforming. But the most fundamental matter of all, it's just resonance.
Resonance, okay. And this definition of plasma, it's not what I learned in science class.
No, definitely not. You have to put that aside. Here, plasma is defined specifically as the rub, the roast between two things. Full resonance or noise that's slowing down.
Decelerating noise.
Right. And the emptiest, silence, that's speeding up, accelerating.
Right, okay, let's pause on that. The rub between accelerating silence and decelerating noise. It sounds like friction is the basis of everything, like energy transformation.
That's exactly the implication. Matter or plasma or resonance, whatever you call it, it's that meeting point, that confluence of silence and noise that you manage to get close to.
Like the edge where sound becomes silence and silence becomes sound.
Kind of like the friction point of existence itself. And if that's the fundamental stuff, then the fundamental observer has to be the thing built to perceive it, our ear.
That's a massive claim, putting the ear at the center, above sight even. The source calls it the most evolved part of the nervous system. Why? We usually think visually.
Well, the argument is the ear deals directly with resonance, that fundamental matter. Sight deals with light waves, which are, you know, a step removed, a derivative.
Okay.
So the ear gets primacy because it's processing those core vibrations. It's not just about hearing sound waves. It's positioned as the center of how we observe the universe's basic rub.
That really flips things around. Okay. So from that fundamental resonance, we get to audible sound, which the source says is the first magnitude of resonance, and it takes a cymatic form, like we see in those vibration patterns.
Right. But then there's this critical difference, spatially, between the external ear and the internal ear. And this is key.
Okay, lay it on me.
It's kind of a paradox. The external ear, it only captures part of the sound, the acoustic stuff bouncing around, but the internal ear, supposedly, captures everything, all the nuance, maybe more than we consciously register.
Right.
But here's the weird part. Every sound takes up a limited, smaller space in the internal ear, but a larger space externally in the environment.
Wait, if the internal ear captures everything, how does it take up less space inside? That feels backward.
I know, it sounds counterintuitive, right? But think of it maybe like data compression. The raw sound out there is big, messy, echoing, takes up bandwidth in the room.
Okay.
But once the internal ear processes it, it gets super efficient. It captures the essence of the resonance, the core information, so it takes up minimal internal space.
Ah, I see. So it's like a perfect compressor, leaving more room, more attention for whatever comes next.
Exactly. More cognitive bandwidth. And this whole dynamic leads directly into something the source calls the percussion paradox.
The percussion paradox. Okay, let's unpack that one, tying it back to this internal space idea.
Okay, so the paradox is about how the sound starts. Percussed sounds, the things you strike, like a drum hit. They're quick, sharp events. They occupy minimal space externally, right? Just a quick pop?
Sure, very brief.
But because they are such clear, sudden bursts of energy, fundamental resonance, they actually demand and occupy the maximum space internally. They grab a huge chunk of that internal attention, that bandwidth.
Wow. Okay. So tiny outside, huge inside. And rubbing sounds are the opposite.
Exactly the opposite. Wind sounds, frottan sounds, rubbing wane. They take up more space externally. They linger. They're more spread out.
Uh-huh.
But internally, they take up a more constrained, maybe shared space. And this matters because, according to the source, how we perceive any sound is colored by the one right before it. A new sound always occupies part of the space left by the previous one.
That makes sense. It affects the quality of the feeling.
Yeah. And that sets us up perfectly to talk about musical instruments. Because if how a sound starts struck versus rubbed changes its internal footprint so drastically,
then we need to look at how instruments actually make those sounds.
Right. So traditionally, we have wind, string, and percussion, pretty standard. And within strings, you've got the three main types: bowed, which is frottata or rubbed, plucked, which is pulsata, and struck, percutita, like a piano string.
And the source points to plucked instruments, like the guitar, as being the most popular for a specific reason.
Yes, it calls them the centroids, the center point, the average of the other types.
Plainy.
Meaning they sort of balance the sustained resonance you get from bowing with the rhythmic punch of striking. They sit in that sweet spot, appealing to both sides.
Okay, that makes sense, popularity-wise. So if that's the standard setup, where does Frottis fit in? What is it practically on something like a guitar?
Frottis is basically the deliberate tendency towards the rub. When you're playing an instrument that's normally plucked, struck, or percussive, it's a conscious choice, a technique, or even a philosophy.
Leaning into the rub.
Yeah, and the source calls it the minimal emulation of surprise or novelty, which it links to syncopation. Syncopation. By choosing to rub, you're creating a little internal resonant surprise on an instrument built for clean attacks.
You know, the source mentions how little notation there is for things like rasgado, that flamenco strumming or scraping, like the speed up versus down, how hard.
Exactly. And that lack points to why Frottis matters. The force says the missing piece is the trigonometry of energetic distribution across the fingers.
Okay, fancy term for?
For figuring out how to rub effectively. Which finger, hard or soft, fingertip or nail, where on the string. All those details that affect the internal resonance. Without mapping that, you're missing the potential.
So this really shifts from just technique to, well, psychology almost. The source connects more direct physical contact with the instrument to more subjectivity, more resonance going inward.
Right. It points out that wind and bowed instruments naturally involve more contact. And this helps explain something we've probably all seen or heard, right?
Right.
Why do beginners, or maybe, you know, very emotional players, sometimes really scrape heavily at a guitar, or even just mime playing with lots of movement?
Yeah, you see that. Is it just because they can't play cleanly yet?
Not entirely. Or maybe not just that. The source suggests they're instinctively trying to get that high contact, maximum resonance feeling you'd get from a bowed wind instrument. That heavy rasgado is more performative, more kinesic, because they're chasing that feeling.
Ah, they want to feel the music physically.
Exactly. Frottis helps you feel it. And when you're starting out, that immediate physical feedback, that internal buzz, is maybe more important than sounding perfect to someone else.
So the beginner is naturally prioritizing the internal resonance, the feeling in their own ear space, over the clean sound for an audience.
They're basically embracing Frottis without knowing it. But interestingly, the dynamic flips for experts. The source claims Frottis is actually harder for, say, highly trained theoretical musicians.
Really? Why would rubbing strings be harder for someone who's technically skilled?
Conditioning.
Yeah.
They've likely been trained, you know, conditioned to believe that only the clean, externally audible music that pleases others is what counts. The product, not the internal process. So because of that, the source says they tend to hide more behind the instrument. They might actually be embarrassed by that direct, maybe messy, tactile contact that doesn't produce a perfectly pleasing external sound.
So they value the audience's potential judgment over their own internal experience?
That's the idea. And the goal of Frottis is sort of a rebellion against that. It's about prioritizing your own enjoyment, your own internal resonance, over whether other people like the sound you're making. It's about cultivating sonic self-interest, maybe.
Sonic self-interest. I like that. Okay, so this whole approach, this Frottis mindset, it has this weird duality in practice, right? Recording versus playing live.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Playing Frottis live, totally raw. The source says it can sound kind of empty or maybe just noisy because that internal stuff doesn't always translate well into a big external space without help.
But
Frottis is apparently very thankful for recording and equalization. If you mic it carefully, mix it right.
Ah, so the studio can capture what gets lost live.
Precisely. The recording process can pick up all those subtle friction sounds, the scrapes, the nuances of the rub that get totally lost in typical pulsed or clean playing. It rediscovers hidden sounds, especially what the source calls pseudo-percussion.
Pseudo-percussion, like the little clicks and thumps from the rubbing itself.
Exactly. Things that weren't necessarily notes but are part of the total resonant event. And because you capture all that internal richness, The Force suggests that recording Frotis, even on just a guitar, can surprisingly easily create the effect of a one-man orchestra.
Wow, just by focusing on the rub and recording it well.
It captures the full breadth of those internal space dynamics we talked about earlier.
Okay, connecting this back out now. If this idea of tactile resonance, the rub, is so fundamental, does it apply beyond music? The Source draws some pretty big analogies.
It really does. It suggests Frotis is a good musical analogy for, get this, the theory of homeopathic dilution.
Homeopathy? How does that connect?
Think about it. Minimal physical input, the subtle energy, the contact, the rub, creating a potentially maximal internal subjective effect. That's the parallel. Small cause, big resonant impact internally.
Okay, I can see the analogy there. What else?
There's a link to the body itself. The Source connects the most audible internal sound blood flow, described as windfroat, which underlies the pulse percussion of the heartbeat.
Interesting. Windfroat and pulse percussion within us.
And then there's vocal frotis, defined as the pre-lyric stuff. Whispering, whistling, humming, onomatopoeia.
Like beatboxing. Or even ASMR.
Exactly. The Source connects it directly to beatboxers and ASMR creators. They intentionally use those subtle, friction-based sounds to maximize that internal resonance sensation in the listener. It's pure vocal Frotis in action.
Okay. And the last one, tactual Frotis.
Yeah, the most intimate one. Applying the idea to physical touch, things like massage or dancing really closely.
So the physical rub itself becomes a source.
A source from which sensations, maybe even compositional ideas, could be drawn. It just shows that this Frotis philosophy, the intentional rub for internal resonance, might be a universal principle for how we perceive things through touch and friction, way beyond just music.
So wrapping this up, we've gone from, wow, the fundamental nature of matter as plasma, this rub between silence and noise, through how sound takes up space differently inside versus outside our ears,
right,
and landed on the very specific intimate act of rubbing a guitar string. Frotis seems to be about maximizing that internal feeling, that resonance, through deliberate physical contact, even if it means questioning what we think good music is supposed to sound like externally.
And remember, we started by noting that concentrated sound origins link to the genesis or immune system, while spread out origins link to evolution or the nervous system.
Yeah.
Well, the Source leaves us with a challenge, something for you, the listener, to maybe try. Attempt Frotis using the most objects possible, played by people using the largest portion of their bodies possible.